Micah Clarke by Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized in five parts by Constance Cox. With Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie, and featuring Simon Ward as the Duke of Monmouth. Micah Clarke, Part 4, The Battle for the Crown.
Early in the morning of June the 28th, we reached the town of Frome, very wet and miserable, for the rain had come on again, and all the roads were quagmires. Next day, we pushed on once more to Wells, where we spent the night and the whole of the next morning, to give the men time to get their clothes dry, and to recover themselves after their privations. In the forenoon, a parade of our Wiltshire regiment was held in the Cathedral Close, when Monmouth praised it, as it well deserved, for the soldierly progress made in so short a time. As we returned to our quarters after dismissing our men, we came upon a great throng of the rough Ore and Bagworthy miners, who were assembled in the open space in front of the cathedral, listening to one of their number, who was addressing them from a cart. The wild and frenzied gestures of the man showed us that he was one of those extreme sectaries whose religion runs perilously near to madness. The hums and groans which rose from the crowd proved, however, that his fiery words were well suited to his hearers. So we halted on the verge of the multitude and hearkened to his address. A red-bearded, fierce-faced man he was, with tangled, shaggy hair tumbling over his gleaming eyes, and a hoarse voice which resounded over the whole square.
What shall we not do for the Lord? Why is it that his hand is heavy upon us? Why is it we have not yet freed this land from the shackles of popery? Surely, brothers, it is because we have slighted the Lord. I say we have slighted him. We have praised him with our breath. But in our deeds, we have been cold towards him.
What the deuce does the fellow mean?
Have we not seen popish churches? And have we not forborne to sweep them away? And so let our sanction to them. We have spared those wicked walls, raised by idolaters of old. Well, I say unto you, if having put your hands to God's plough, you turn back from the work. See there! What means this great heap of stones? Is it not built for man worship rather than God worship? And shall we, the chosen people of the great one, allow this plague spot to remain? Shall we leave this one too, my brothers? Or shall we pluck it down until no stone is left upon another? Now, at once! There's the word, my brothers! Spare it not!
By heaven, they mean to destroy the cathedral!
The preacher had sprung down from the cart and rushed towards the cathedral, the whole mob of wild fanatics at his heels. Some crowded into the church, others swarmed up the pillars and pedestals of the front, hacking at the sculptured ornaments and tugging at the old grey images which filled every niche.
This must be stopped. It'll do our cause infinite harm. Sir Gerus, bring up your company. We'll hold them in check till you come.
I may be of use here. Look at me.
Right
to the camp. Tell Barker to bring my musketeers.
Aye. Here's Bowser and Lord Grey. They'll help us.
What is this rioting?
The cathedral, my lord. Those men mean to sack and burn it.
We are five. With good sword, we can stop them.
But gentlemen, I'm the verger. You are soldiers. Try if you can to prevail over these lawless men. They pulled down St. Peter, and they'll have Paul down too, unless help comes.
Help is coming.
Oh, thank God. The east window is broken, and they brought in a hugs and a beer, and have broken it upon the high altar. Alas, such things should be in a Christian land.
We'll never get in at the front entrance, my lord.
I have the keys to the vestry, if you'll follow me. Oh, lackaday! I fear St. Paul has gone!
As he spoke, a splintering crash from inside the cathedral announced some fresh outrage on the part of the zealots. Our guide hastened on with renewed speed until he came to a low, oaken door, heavily arched, which he unlocked with much rasping of wards and creaking of hinges. Through this we sidled as best we might and hurried after the old man down a stone-flagged corridor which led through a wicket gate into the cathedral close by the high altar. That great building was full of the rioters, who were rushing hither and thither, destroying and breaking everything which they could lay their hands on. A good number of these were genuine zealots, the followers of the preacher whom we'd listened to outside. Others, however, were on the face of them mere rogues and thieves, such as gather round every army upon the march. While the former were tearing down images from the walls or hurling the books of common prayer through the stained glass windows, the others were rooting up the massive brass candlesticks and carrying away everything which promised to be of value. In the centre of the side aisle, a small group had a rope round the neck of Mark the Evangelist and were dragging lustily upon it until, even as we entered, the statue, after tottering for a few moments, came crashing down upon the marble floor. The shouts which greeted every fresh outrage, with the splintering of woodwork, the smashing of windows, and a clatter of falling masonry, made up a most deafening uproar.
My God! This is sacrilege! Look upon them!
What had caused Bowser's outburst was the scene at the high altar. A barrel of beer had been placed upon it, and one of the dozen ruffians who surrounded it was engaged in knocking in the top of the cask with a hatchet.
There is enough fight in this way!
Bowser, calm yourself!
Unheeding, the great German sprang upon the altar as the ringleader was bending over the cask. His soldier's iron grip fell upon his collar, and in a moment his heels were flapping in the air and his head 3 feet deep in the barrel. Then, with a mighty heave, Bowser picked up the barrel with the half-drowned miner in it and hurled it clattering down the marble steps into the body of the church.
German! The musketeers are coming! If we could hold out till then...
Go forward, my brothers! What the leaping in high places! There is one who is higher than they! To your swords, gentlemen! We may be able to hold this position till help arrives!
Well, if they have swords, you have twice size the knives! Slay them as the Lord slew the Amalekites!
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. In the name of the Lord!
Right.
There are old men, Saxon. We can't kill them.
There's no help for it. Be merciful if you can.
Order! In the name of the Lord!
I can say nothing of what took place to right or left of me during the ruffle, for indeed there were so many pressing upon us, and the fight was so hot, that it was all that each of us could do to hold our own. The very number of our assailants was in our favour by hampering their sword arms. One burly miner cut fiercely at me with his scythe, but missing me, he swung half round with the force of the blow, and I passed my sword through his body before he could recover himself. A marshman, looking more like a shaggy wild beast than a human being, darted under my weapon and caught me round the knees, while another brought a flail down upon my headpiece, from which it glanced onto my shoulder. A third thrust at me with a pike and pricked me on the thigh. But I saw his weapon in two with one blow and split his head with the next. The man with the flail gave back at the sight of this, and a kick freed me from the unarmed ape-like creature at my feet, so that I found myself clear of my assailants, and none the worse for my encounter, save for a touch on the leg and some stiffness of the neck and shoulder.
Well done, Clark. With your two and my two, four of the rogues would trouble us no more. What's your score, Sir Jervis?
Four of the poor fellows. I fear it was murder. They don't know how to defend themselves. The Princess snapped all right.
Thank you, Jerome. Where's the preacher fellow?
I have disposed of him. Would I have done it sooner?
Prepare yourselves, gentlemen. They're not beaten off yet.
The fanatics, though driven back, were not men to be content with a single repulse. For a minute or so, they gathered panting in the aisle. Then, with a mad yell, they dashed at us once more and made a desperate effort to cut a way through to the altar. In such a struggle, numbers must in the end prevail, and I had begun to have fears of the upshot of our contest when the tramp of disciplined feet rang through the cathedral. The fanatics did not await their charge, but darted off over benches and pews, followed by the musketeers. There was a wild minute or two of confused shuffling of feet, stabs, groans, and the riot was over.
Arrest all those men! Are you hurt, Sir Jervis?
Windows, Valimore. It was all rather glorious, I thought.
Place a strong guard at the cathedral gate. I think we may safely leave now, gentlemen.
On the last day of June, we marched out of Wells and made our way across the sedgy plains to Bridgewater. it was decided by Monmouth and his councillors that here we should make our final stand, and thus, without a loophole of escape, we awaited the approach of the enemy. Our regiment had been taken off duty whenever it was clear that Feversham did not mean to advance, and they were now busy upon the victuals which our night foray had furnished. As I made my way through the crowded street, I heard my name urgently called.
Captain Clark! Captain Clark!
Is something amiss, Colonel Saxon?
Very badly, if what Captain Lockerbie here tells us is correct. Tell him, Captain.
Micah, you remember I and my company were in guard at the Eastern Gate this morning?
Well, of course, you were told to observe the enemy's disposition.
Well, in order to see better, I climbed up a tree, he said. All right, you, Micah Clark, you laugh. I know when I was fatter, I could never have done it.
Get on with your story, man.
Well, while I was watching, I saw a man come from the enemy lines and sneak back into the town. He was walking under cover, as if he was trying to hide himself.
Captain Lockerbie believes he'd been to the royal camp to give them information of our intentions.
Did you recognize the man?
Yes, I recognized him all right. It was Derek, the mayor's chief apprentice.
Derek? But he's in love with the mayor's granddaughter. Why should he turn traitor?
Love, Captain Clark, is a very pretty flower when it grows unchecked, but a very nasty weed when it's sported. For I suspect our gallant Captain Lockerbie has found some little favour in the maid's eyes.
But it wouldn't aid the man's suit to betray us.
It would if Captain Lockerbie is killed and he survives, as he very well may if he's turned informer.
What should we do, Colonel Saxon? Arrest him?
We have no proof. And he's bound to have some tale prepared to cover himself. It'd be better to take him in the very act.
But how?
I think I have it. Colonel, you remember that lonely cottage standing on the road between the marshes?
I've seen it, yes.
Well, anyone going into the enemy camp must pass it. If Derek tried to carry out plans for the enemy, he could be cut off at that point by a party lying in wait for him.
Excellent. Arrange what help you need, and I'll see that Master Derek is primed with fresh news for Lord Feversham.
I think a body of troops might alert him. Why shouldn't just Michael and I go? You'll be alone.
Very well. But you must be back by sundown. Your companies must stand to arms an hour before the advance. For the sake of the cause, be vigilant.
Reuben and I, leaving our horses behind, slipped out of the eastern gate and made our way over bog and moor, concealing ourselves as best we could until we came to the lonely cottage. It was a plain, whitewashed, thatched hovel, with a small board above the door, whereon was written a notice that the occupier sold milk and butter. No smoke reeked up from the chimney, and the shutters of the window were closed, from which we gathered that the folk who owned it had fled away from their perilous position.
It looks deserted.
All the better. There's no cover for us on the moor.
Knock first and make sure.
No one answers. Let's try the door.
Locked.
Stand back. I'll force it.
Right.
Go away! Go away!
For heaven's sake! It's a little child.
Go away. Granny told me not to let anyone in.
But if they wouldn't go away, little mistress, what would you do then?
I was to drive them away. Oh. You bad man, you've broken Granny's bolt.
Oh, well, I'll mend it again, sweetheart. Only the staple has come out. If I drive it in again with this stone... There. You see? Now your granny will never know the difference.
You must go away all the same. This is Granny's house, not yours.
But we're tired and thirsty. Could we buy some milk from you, little one?
Oh, yes. Granny sells milk. We've got a cow. Well,
then we'd like some, please.
Will you pay me for it like folks pay Granny?
Of course we will.
Then you shall have some.
That's a good notion, Reuben. We must stay here till Derek comes.
There. A penny, please.
Ah. Well, that's a penny for each of us.
Oh, thank you. I'll put it in Granny's mug.
Take it to the window. And for the Lord's sake, drink slow. We must keep on swilling milk or she'll turn us out.
When you've finished, you must go away.
What, when we're so weary? Look, little one. Here's a shilling. Now, that'll buy all your milk and we can stay here and drink it at our ease.
I can get more. The cow's just behind the cottage, and it's near milking time. Shall I go?
Lord forbid. We shall end in buying the cow. Where is your granny, child?
Gone into the town. She says there are bad men with red coats and guns coming to steal and to fight. But my granny will soon make them go away.
Well, we're fighting the men with the red coats, little one. We'll take care of your house with you and won't let anyone steal anything.
Then I'll let you stay.
Thank you. Now don't be frightened of us. Hey, come and sit on my knee. Now, what's your name?
Rosemary.
Ah, and how old are you?
Six, nearly seven.
Mm.
What a great big boy you are.
And why not a man?
Because you haven't much hair on your face. My granny has more hair on her chin than you have. Besides, only boys drink milk, men drink cider.
Then if I'm a boy, I shall be your sweetheart.
No, you can't be.
Why not?
Giles Martin is my sweetheart, but I'm not wedding him for a while.
And very rightly.
Why do you wear this hard thing on your chest and carry this great big sword?
To fight the bad men in red coats who might be coming to harm you.
Why do people fight each other when they're all brothers?
Why are they brothers, Rosemary?
Because Granny says they're all children of the great father. So if they all have one father, they must be brothers, mustn't they?
Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, Micah. I think a day of this child would sicken me of soldiering forever.
Yeah, but we put our hands to the plough and can't draw back.
Micah! Derek in the shadow of a bush only a yard or two away.
Are you sure?
I've reason to know him well.
Now, Rosemary, you must be a brave lass and sit here in this corner and make no sound. Will you do that, whatever may happen?
Yes.
You'll pass here in a few seconds.
Unfasten the door. Be ready to fling it open. Remember, sweetheart, this is a bad man.
Yes.
He's coming.
Draw your sword. Now!
This is as far as you go, Master Derek.
What the devil do you here?
Waiting for you.
For what purpose?
To arrest you. You'll now return with us to the camp.
On what grounds do you arrest me? Haven't I a right to walk in the king's highway?
Not for your reasons. You've been once already to the enemy camp this morning.
It's a lie.
I saw you myself.
I strolled from camp to take some air.
I doubtless you're doing now. Let's see that paper you're trying to hide in your doublet.
I know why you set this trap for me. Because I stand in your light with Mistress Ruth. What are you that you dare raise your eyes to her? A mere vagrant coming from God knows where. What did you to do with her and with us? Answer me.
Not a more fitting time and place, John Derek. Meanwhile, give up your sword and come back with us. I'll do what I can to save you from being shot as a traitor.
Oh, thank you for your kindly protection. You can take this as a gift to Mistress Ruth.
Reuben, look out, his dagger!
Take it now if you can!
I had no time to attend to Reuben, for Derek had turned and fled down the road. But although he was a far lighter man than I, he had no chance of shaking me off. In desperation, he left the road and sprang wildly through the reeds and dashed into the treacherous morass. Ankle deep, knee deep, thigh deep, waist deep, we struggled and staggered, I still gaining upon him, until I was within arm's reach of him and had whirled up my sword to strike. It had been ordained, however, that he should die not the death of a man, but that of the reptile which he was. For even as I closed upon him, he sank of a sudden with a gurgling sound, and the green marsh scum met above his head. No ripple was there, and no splash to mark the spot. It was sudden and silent, as though some monster of the marshes had seized him and dragged him down into the depths. As I stood with upraised sword, still gazing upon the spot, one single great bubble rose and burst upon the surface. And then all was still once more, and the dreary fens lay stretched before me, the very home of death and desolation. I made my way as best I could through the oozy, clinging mud and hastened back to where Reuben lay.
I hope you've not killed him, Micah.
Not I. The marsh claimed him.
The marsh? Oh, poor devil.
How badly are you hurt?
I fancy Munwith will have to do without me tomorrow. If those are Feversham's men, save yourself, Micah.
No, it's Saxon.
Hi there!
I spied something was wrong from the church tower and brought a few men and a surgeon with me. So, the serpent stung you, eh, Captain Lockerbie?
In the side with his dagger.
I doubt it'll prove fatal. Men, carry him into the cottage and let the surgeon look at him. Then we'll carry him back to the town. Where is Derek?
Drowned in the marshes.
Well, that'll save us 6 feet of good rope. Hello? Who's the child sitting in the corner?
Oh, the guardian of the house. Her grandmother has left her here.
Then she'd better come with us. There may be a rough work here before all is over.
No, I must wait here for Granny. Granny said I was to stay here.
But if I were to take you to Granny, Rosemary...
Oh, yes, please. Take me away. I'm frightened.
Hurry and make a litter for Captain Lockerbie. Aye. We're exposed here, and the royal horse may make a dash for us. Bestir yourselves.
A litter was made for Reuben, and I took the trembling child in my arms, and slowly we returned to Bridgewater. While Reuben was carried to our quarters, I bore the little maid of the marshes to kind townsfolk, who promised to restore her to her home when the troubles were over. King Monmouth held a last council of war upon the square tower of Bridgewater Church, whence a good view could be obtained of Sedgemoor Plain within 4 miles of the town. He held a pair of ivory glasses, and as he raised them to his eyes, his white hands shook and twitched, until it was grievous to watch him.
Some of the enemy forces are men I've led myself when I commanded the regular troops. Over on the right I see Dumbarton's foot. I know those men well. They'll fight. If only they were with us, all would be well.
Your Majesty does your brave followers an injustice. They too will fight to the last drop of their blood in your quarrel.
Look down at them. Brave they may be, but they babble and clamour like clowns on a Saturday night. Compare them with the trained battalions. I should never have dragged them from their homes to fight in so hopeless a battle.
Hark to that, sire. They don't think it hopeless. Nor do we.
It's Dr. Ferguson been preaching to them, sire.
They do indeed seem hot for battle. Perhaps I'm prone to lay too much weight on the difference discipline and training make. Colonel Saxon, what do you think of the enemy's dispositions?
I think nothing of them, Your Majesty. I've seen armies drawn up in many parts of the world and under many commanders. I see nothing to commend the arrangements we see before us.
Sir Stephen?
Your Majesty?
That hamlet on the left of... what do you call it? Sedgemoor?
That's West Zoyland, Your Majesty. The other, just on the far side of the Rhine, is Chedzoy.
The Rhine, sir? What do you mean, the Rhine?
Why, Rhine, Your Majesty, a ditch. What the people in these parts call a Rhine.
Something was foretold to me of a Rhine. Some prophecy near the beginning of our venture. Captain Clark, you brought it.
Yes, sir.
From whom was it?
Sir Jacob Plansing, sire. When he sent you the gold.
I recall it now. When thy star is in trine, between darkness and shine, Duke Monmouth, beware of the Rhine. You were there, Grey, when I read it.
I considered it then, sire, as I do now, a foolish piece of doggerel from a senile old man. It merits no further thought.
If I may speak, sire.
Master Wade.
There is something in the order of the enemy troops that recalls to me what I have heard of the Battle of Dunbar. There, too, was the ground boggy and treacherous. It seems to me we might, as Cromwell did, approach Chedzoy, keeping the morass between ourselves and the enemy, and fall upon their flanks.
Sire, there's good sense in what Master Wade says. We must either fall on or be starved out. So why not take the advantage of the chance this gives us?
What's your advice, Colonel Bowser?
My advice is ever the same, sire. We are here to fight, and the sooner we get to work at it, the better.
Colonel Saxon.
I agree with Master Wade, sire. The enemy has laid himself open to attack, and we should take advantage of it. I would, however, be in favor of a night onfall.
The same thought was in my mind. Our friends here know it every inch of the ground. They could guide us to Chedzoy as surely in the darkness as in the day.
Has anyone anything to say against this plan? Then if all are agreed, let our word be soho, and let us come upon them as soon after midnight as may be. You will now return to your regiments. And remember this. Be the upshot of our venture that Monmouth be crowned King of England or a hunted fugitive, his heart, while it can still beat, will ever bear in memory his brave friends who stood at his side in his time of trouble. If Monmouth cannot have all England, 6 feet of her shall at least be his. Now to your regiments. And may God defend the right.
May God defend the right.
11 o'clock was the hour appointed for our army to march out against the royal forces. But before the assembly, I found time to look in upon my wounded friend.
Captain Clark, good evening.
Oh, Major Ogilvy.
Major Ogilvy's been reading to me from a book of plays.
Though I fancy a book of sermons would have been more to your taste, eh, Captain Lockerbie?
How fares it with you, Reuben?
I would ride out with you, Micah, but I doubt if I could stay in my horse. Oh, what's my company to do without their captain?
It has been joined to mine. I shall be proud to lead them.
It's too bad that a little wound like this should lay me low, after all our marching and drilling. I've been present at the grace and cut off from the dinner.
Now you and the Major will have a quieter night than we shall. What do you think of our chances, Major?
Would you have me be honest?
You think little of them?
I've thought little of them from the first. Monmouth is like a ruined gambler who's now putting his last piece on the board. He can't win much, and he may lose all.
The chance is better than that.
Is it?
If we win this encounter, the whole of the Midland might come out for him.
No, no, Captain Clark. England's not ripe for it.
England does not want a papist king.
True. But why risk so much to bring about what must come in time? The Prince of Orange is the next in succession and a Protestant. The people will have what they want without bloodshed. Besides, the man you support is unworthy of your loyalty. He breaks his word.
How so?
When he landed in this country 2 months ago, he declared he would leave the choice of a monarch to the commons. In less than a week, he proclaimed himself king at Taunton. Now, who could believe a man who has so little regard for truth?
Treason, Major, treason. Still, I admit, if one could order a leader as one orders a coat, we might have chosen one of stronger stuff. We're in arms not for him, but for the rights and liberties of Englishmen. Oh, and speaking of coats, have you seen Sir Gervis?
You'll find him in the room above. He's preparing himself for battle as if it was a court ball. If the king's troops take him, they'll assuredly think that they have the duke himself. He's been in here to consult us about his patches, his hose, and I know not what besides. You'd best go up to him, and my patient must go to sleep.
Goodbye, then, Reuben.
Goodbye, Micah. God shield you from harm.
May I speak to you aside, Major?
Let's step outside. In what may I oblige you, Captain Clark?
In this, Major.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I may say your captivity has not been made harsh for you.
Through your good offices, Captain.
Might I ask, then, that you keep an eye on Captain Lockerbie, should we be defeated tonight? Not Hale can look after themselves, but he's helpless and will need a friend.
I swear to God, no harm shall befall him. My hand on it.
Well, you've taken a load from my heart, Major. Now I can ride to battle with an easy mind.
God go with you, Captain Clark.
Oh, devil, take this cravat. Will it never go properly? Enter! Oh, it's you, Micah. Come in, friend, come in.
You look very fine, Jervis.
A shadow of my former self, I fear. It's sorry work in this dismal camp, trying to keep oneself from being an offence to the eye.
I never saw such a gallant. Plum-coloured velvet, a wig in the latest fashion, your breastplate, spurs and sword sheath polished like silver. We've not a speck or a stain on you.
I trust not indeed. If I've any fault to find with Monmouth, it's that he's begun to be neglectful of his person. If he stood before us this morning quite dishevelled and unkempt, it grieved me to see him.
He has more on his mind at this moment than his appearance.
He should have appeared as if he was going to levy a court. He had the air of a defeated man, and such an air does not inspire confidence. I would never dream of going even to the block without excessive care of my toilette.
His unkempt appearance, as you call it, is more likely to endear him to his followers.
Fiddle-dee, friend Micah. A leader should always look like a leader. Have you ever seen me look as he did before my pikemen?
Oh, never, I confess.
Yet they'll follow me to the death, as I fear it will be. Which will be timely, since I've nothing left to spend. Pour me a glass of wine, my friend, and help yourself while I try and get this cravat unwrinkled.
How are you going to occupy yourself with such trifles at such a time?
Trifles? Trifles? Oh, well, never mind. It's useless trying to argue with you. You'd never understand the importance of such matters. Ah, thank you. Your health, friend Micah.
And yours, Jervis.
Is all ready for our venture?
Your company awaits you by the church. I saw them as I passed.
How did they look? Were they powdered and clean?
Oh, in good order, I thought.
I believe they'll bear themselves well. More wine for you.
No more, thank you.
Then the major might care to finish it. It's not often I need help with a bottle, but I must keep my head cool this night. Let's go down and see the men.
It was after 10 o'clock when we descended into the street. The hubbub of the preachers and the shouting of the people had died away, for the regiments had fallen into their places and stood silent and stern, with the faint light from the lamps and windows playing over their dark, serried ranks. A cool, clear moon shone down upon us from amidst fleecy clouds, which drifted ever and anon across her face. Away in the north, tremulous rays of light flickered up into the heavens, coming and going like long, quivering fingers. These were the northern lights, a sight rarely seen in the southland counties. It is little wonder that, coming at such a time, the fanatic should have pointed to them as signals from another world, and should have compared them to that pillar of fire which guided Israel through the dangers of the desert. The footpaths and the windows were crowded with women and children, who broke into shrill cries of fear or of wonder as the strange light waxed and waned.
It's after 10:30 by St. Mary's clock. Have we nothing to give the men?
Well, there's a hogshead of cider in the yard of my inn. Here, Dawson.
Yes, sir.
Take these gold seedlings and buy the barrel. See, each man has his horn full.
Yes, sir.
They shan't fight with nothing but cold water in them.
That was good of you, Sir Jervis. They'll fill the need before the morning. This marsh air is chilling to the blood.
Oh, look, gentlemen. There on that magnificent charger. At last, Monmouth looks every inch a king.
All cheering had been forbidden, but waving caps and brandished arms spoke the ardour of his devoted followers. No bugle was to sound the march, but as each company received the word, the one behind followed its movements. The clatter and shuffle of hundreds of moving feet came nearer and nearer, until the Froom men in front of us began to march, and we found ourselves fairly started upon the last journey which many of us were ever to take in this world. A dense haze lay over the moor, gathering thickly in the hollows, and veiling both the town which we had left and the villages which we were approaching. Very slow our march was, and very careful, for the plain was, as Sir Stephen Timewell had told us, cut across by great ditches or rinds, which could not be passed save at some few places. So far our enterprise had succeeded admirably. We were within 1/2 mile of the camp without mistake or accident, and none of the enemy's scouts had shown sign of their presence. Clearly, they held us in such contempt that it never occurred to them that we might open the attack. If ever a general deserved a beating, it was Feversham that night. As we drew up upon the moor, the clock of Chedzoy struck 1.
This is glorious. What is there on earth to compare with the excitement of this?
You speak as though it were a cockfighting or a bull baiting. The chances are that few of us will see tomorrow's sunrise.
I've no great curiosity to see it. It'll be much as yesterday's. Zounds, though, I've never risen to see one in my life. I've looked on many ere I went to bed. What a lucky chance it was to spend my fortune while I was still alive to enjoy it. What bird is that?
It's an owl, of course. Have you ever heard one before?
I thought all birds flew by day. Life is indeed life on such a night as this. Rabbit me, but you're to be envied, Clark, for having been born and bred in the country. I think I could live a simple pastoral life myself, provided there was a playhouse, a coffee house, and a good tailor's within reach.
You've been moping within the week.
You think I jest? But I tell you, I've lived more and learned more during these few weeks that we've been sliding about in the rain with our ragged lads than ever I did when I was a page at court. Why are we waiting here?
Well, I think for our guides to come back. Jervis, I've told my friend Reuben a few things I should like to be done in case I should fall. Is there any service of the sort I can do for you?
Well, I've provided for my old nurse as best I can. Oh, perhaps Tommy Chichester might be glad to hear of the fun we've had in Somerset. You'll find him at the Coca Tree every day between 2 and 4. Oh, and, yes, I've a trinket or two left. Give them to pretty Mistress Ruth, should our friend lead her to the altar. How now, Colonel? But why are we stuck out on the moor like this?
They're ordering the line for the attack. Whoever saw a camp so exposed to an onfall? If only I had 1,200 good horse, I'd trample them down like young corn after a hailstorm.
We have horse. They could advance and do as you say.
Boy, I mean cavalry, not such a few as we can muster. Now, if this fight's to be won, it must be by our foot. Keep your men well in hand. We may have to bear the brunt of the king's dragoons. A flank attack would fall upon us. We have the post of honor.
There are troops to the right of us.
Aye, the Taunton burghers and the Frome peasants. Nor could I wish for better, comrades. If their zeal doesn't outrun their discretion, they're on their knees praying at this moment.
They'll fight none the worse for that. Listen, our troops are advancing.
Aye, the hour has come. Forward!
Very slowly and silently, we crept through the dense fog, our feet splashing and slipping in the sodden soil. But with all the care we took, the advance of so great a number of men could not be conducted without a deep, sonorous sound from the thousands of marching feet. Ahead of us were splotches of ruddy light twinkling through the fog, which marked the royal watchfires. Immediately in front of us, in a dense column, our own horse moved forward.
Who goes there?
We've caught them unawares. Forward!
At the first alarm, our horse charged forward, and we followed them as fast as our men could run.
We've reached the first outpost! On, men! On!
We had crossed 200 or 300 yards of moor and could hear the blowing of the royal bugles quite near to us when our horse came to a sudden stop and our whole advance was at a standstill.
Santa Maria, what are we stopping for? We must on at any cost, or hope will ruin us now.
What the devil's going on up front?
We can't go on.
Can't? I can see the enemy man as plainly as I can see you.
But we can't reach them, sir. We've been betrayed.
Betrayed?
There's a ditch without a ford in front of us.
A ditch? Man, we don't stop for a ditch.
This is impossible, sir. It's 20 feet across.
Give me room for my horse and I'll show you how to cross it.
No, sir, I beg you. Our sergeant tried it even now, and he and his horse have gone to the bottom.
Let's see it, then.
We followed on Saxon's heels until we found ourselves on the borders of the vast trench that impeded our advance. It stretched in front of us, broad, black, and forbidding, full 20 feet from bank to bank. The cap of the ill-fated sergeant was just visible in the centre, as a mute warning to all who might attempt to ford it.
In God's name, how came the guide to lead us to this? He shall hang as high as Haman.
Major Hollis flung him into the ditch, sir. He's already paid for his treachery, or his mistake.
As we shall pay, unless we take action. Every moment we lose is worth a troop of horse to the enemy. They're assembling for the attack. There must be a passage across somewhere. Where's Lord Grey? What's he doing?
He's riding along the bank trying to find a ford.
They've not much time. We shall lose all our advantage. Trooper, make for the rear. Gallop as though the devil were behind you. Bring up a pair of ammunition wagons. We may be able to bridge this infernal battle.
Yes, sir.
Had them in the hollow of our hands till this moment. May that traitorous guide burn in hell.
If only a few of us could get across, we might engage part of that force and still help King.
All down the rebel line, a fierce, low growl of disappointment and rage showed that the whole army had met the obstacle that hindered our attack. On the other side of the ditch, the drums beat, the bugles screamed, and the shouts and oaths of the officers could be heard as they marshalled their men. Saxon rode up and down the edge of the ditch, muttering foreign oaths, grinding his teeth in fury, and rising now and again in his stirrups to shake his gauntlet at the enemy.
How long are they going to be, for Christ's sake? Hurry, men, hurry!
You! You across the water! Who are you for?
The king! We are for the king!
For the king! For which king?
For King Monmouth! King Monmouth!
Let them have it!
A storm of musket bullets whistled and sung about our ears. As the sheet of flame sprang out of the darkness, the maddened, half-broken horses dashed wildly away across the plain, resisting the efforts of their riders to pull them up. They thundered through the ranks of the foot and out over the moor, leaving their companions to bear the whole brunt of the battle.
On your faces, men! Let the shot go over you! Bring your musketeers forward, Sir Gervas!
Fire, men! Kneel! Take aim! Delete! Fire!
So near had both armies been brought to the edge of the great ditch that there were not five pike's lengths between them. Yet that short distance was so impassable that a quarter of a mile might have divided us. So near were we that the burning wads from the enemy's muskets flew in flakes of fire over our heads, and we felt upon our faces the quick, hot flush of their discharges. Yet, although the air was alive with bullets, the aim of the soldiers was too high for our kneeling ranks, and very few of our men were struck.
Where in hell are those wagons I sent for? We must cross or we're done for.
We're holding our own in this quarter. Their fire is slackening.
It's their horse, I fear. They can avoid the ditch and take us on the flank. They'll be upon us at any time. What the devil is Sir Gervas doing riding to the very edge?
Gervas, watch yourself!
You're making yourself a target, man.
I simply wish to make the enemy's acquaintance. Hello there. Can you tell me if we have the honor to be opposed to the Royal Foot Guards?
We're Dumbarton's regiment. We'll give you good cause to remember having met us.
We'll be a good prisoner to make your acquaintance.
He's down. Get him, men, or you'll be in the ditch.
Half a dozen musketeers sprang instantly waist-deep into the mud and dragged our friend out of danger. But his horse, which had been shot through the heart, sank without a struggle.
Are you hurt, man?
Devil a bit. Now I shall fight on foot like my brave musketeers.
The grey light of morning was now stealing over the moor. And across the Rhine, I could see the long lines of red coats, looming up like a battalion of giants. On every side of me, men were falling fast, for the increased light had improved the aim of the soldiers. Everywhere the dead lay thick among the living. Yet no man flinched from his place, and Saxon still walked his horse among them with hope and praise. His stern, deep-lined face and tall, sinewy figure were a very beacon of hope to the simple rustics. Such of my scythemen as could handle a musket were thrown forward into the fighting line and furnished with the arms and pouches of those who had fallen.
Lo! Take aim! Fire! That tells, my God, that tells! Reload and fire again, my hearties!
Suddenly, from the rear of the ranks arose a cry. Bareheaded and wild-eyed, Monmouth rode through our men.
What think you, Colonel Saxon? How goes the fight? Shall we draw off, do you think? Have we any hope of success?
We hold our own here, Your Majesty. If only we had something in the nature of palisades or stockades, we might even make it good against the horse.
Ah, the horse! If we ever get over this, Lord Grey shall answer for it. His cavalry ran like a flock of sheep. What can a leader do with such troops? Shall we not advance?
Hurry, Your Majesty. Even if we made a bridge of our dead, the element of surprise has gone. We can but fight it out as we are.
Your men seem to have given good account of themselves, Saxon, from the look of yonder bank.
They could do even better, Master Wade, with cannon to support us.
The cannoneers fled when the cavalry fled. What can I do with such men? What shall I do?
Stand firm, Colonel Saxon! If it comes to the worst, save yourself!
Must you follow the king and his men, Colonel Bowser?
I'm weary of crossing up and down. Here with you, I'm likely to have my share of any fighting that's going. Greetings, Sir Gervas. Where's your horse?
At the bottom of the ditch. And like you, I've not fleshed my sword yet. It's not what I look forward to.
You'll have something to console you now.
Hey,
My God, is it not splendid? The Royal Horse! Look to it, friend Saxton! Look to it!
Out of the haze, there twinkled now and then a silvery light, while a dull, thundering noise broke upon our ears like that of surf upon a rocky shore. Then, of a sudden, the fog was rent, and the Royal Cavalry broke out from it, wave after wave, rich in scarlet and blue and gold. There was something in the smooth, steady sweep of so great a body of horsemen which gave a feeling of irresistible power.
This is the moment. Steady, brave lads. Dig your pike butts into the earth. Rest it on the right foot. Give not an inch. Steady.
Louder and louder grew the roar of the horse. A great shout went up from either side. And then the living wave broke over us. What words are there to describe such an encounter as this? The crash of steel, the sharp, gasping cries, the snorting of horses, the jar when the push of pike met with the sweep of sword. I seemed to stand in a swirl of smoke from the hail of bullets across the ditch, with steel caps and fierce faces breaking through it, and with the red, gaping nostrils of horses and their pawing forefeet as they recoiled from the hedge of steel. All around us rose godly ejaculations from the peasants and oaths from the horsemen, with Saxon's voice above all, cheering on his men. Then suddenly the cloud of horsemen was gone, circling off over the plain as swiftly as it had come.
They've had enough, my God! They're hiding off!
Not for long, I fear. They'll reform and charge again.
But if we could claim it as a victory, the army in general could scarcely say as much. The Froom peasants were gone, swept utterly from the field. Many had been driven by sheer weight and pressure into the fatal mud which had checked our advance. Hundreds of others, sorely cut and slashed, lay in ghastly heaps all over the ground that they had held. Further off, the men of Taunton still stood fast, though in sadly diminished numbers. Our cavalry was gone, and our ordnance silent, for the powder carts had gone astray. It needed no soldierly experience to see that the battle was lost, and Monmouth's cause was doomed.
Carrington,
sir,
write to Mayor Timewell,
sir.
Tell him to join his men to ours. Together we may stand another charge.
I fancy, Colonel, this is the mayor riding to see us.
How fares it with you, Sir Stephen? You've been hurt.
A graze from a bullet, nothing. But him, that man, for whom we gave everything, whom we followed with our lives, what do you think of him now?
Monmouth?
Yes, Monmouth! Look over there! Behold your king!
My God, he is hiding from the field!
Riding away to save himself while we fight on for a man who has deserted us! Wade, Gray, Ferguson, all fleeing with them.
This is too much. The brave country folk.
Hush, don't dishearten the men. Cowardice is catching. Watch out. The cavalry is on us again. Stand firm to fight to receive cavalry.
Stand firm to your fight.
Again, the whirlwind of horse was upon us. And while the struggle was at its hottest, the king's cannon opened with a deafening roar from the other side of the Rhine. Our men were mown down as though death himself with his scythe was amongst us. At last our ranks were breaking, yet men of Devon, of Dorset, of Wiltshire, of Somerset, trodden down by horse, slashed by dragoons, dropping by scores under the rain of bullets, still fought on with a dogged, desperate courage for a man who had deserted them. Again and again the guards crashed through them from side to side, yet the shattered ranks closed up behind them and continued the long-drawn struggle. So hopeless was it, and so pitiable, that I could have found it in my heart to wish that they would break and fly, were it not that on that broad moor there was no refuge they could make for. Large numbers of our foot fought to the death, neither giving nor receiving quarter. But at last, scattered, broken, and without ammunition, The main body of the peasants dispersed and fled across the moor, closely followed by the horse.
It is no use. We can do no more.
Look to Sir Jervis. He needs help.
Strike them down, men. They're faces. Would you, sir? That's for you.
Ben, hold, my friend. We are with you.
Thanks, Bowser. That bothers Douglas. This is what I came for. It's great sport. Curse me if they're not running away.
And so must we.
Captain Clark, are you asking me to desert for company?
Your company? Man, you're mad. Your company's cut off to the last man.
That's what I mean.
Jervis!
Don't mind about me. Look out for yourselves. Goodbye, Clark. I'm sorry we shan't meet in London.
Jervis!
There are goons!
The royal horse were on us again. We were borne backwards, fighting desperately. I tried to reach Sir Jervis, who was fighting alone. But even as I turned my horse, I saw a sword pierce him to the heart. My gallant friend fell and lay still. Now it was every man for himself. Saxon and I rode for our lives across the moor, followed by a few scattered bodies of horse, who soon abandoned us for easier prey. Reaching the summit of the low hills which lie to the westward of the moor, we stopped and looked back at the heaps of the dead and dying, uncertain where to go.
Where are we to make for, Captain? The King's men will be searching the whole country for rebels. There's no safety here.
No, but I dare not go home.
No, it would bring danger to your folks if you went back to Havant. Why not do as I shall do?
What's that?
Go wherever there's fighting to be had. Hello? It seems we're not free of this business yet. Look at those horsemen.
Oh, more slaughter. Why will they force us to it?
There's only two of them. We can manage them with ease. By the Lord, Harry, I believe I recognize that Springald.
It's the man you quarreled with at Salisbury.
And who set the bloodhounds on us.
Stand and submit yourselves.
I would not flee for a fortune.
You cousining wretch.
You know me, do you?
I know you for a cheat and a traitor. Take him, Corporal.
Oh, no, I'll take you for myself. I've a score to settle with you. I hope you've earned your fence since we last met.
Their swords met an instant after, while the corporal attacked me with such fury it was all I could do to keep him off. Our horses spun round each other, biting and pawing, until at last, coming knee to knee, we grasped each other by the throat. He pulled a dagger from his belt, but I dealt him a blow with my gauntleted hand, which smote him off his horse and stretched him speechless on the plain. At the same moment, the lieutenant fell from his horse, badly wounded.
Now for the coup de grace. Say your prayers, puppy.
No, Saxon, no. We've killed enough. So let him be.
Would they have shown us mercy? Kill your man while I finish this cur.
Not in cold blood. Nor will I let you.
And how will you prevent me?
To kill him? You'll have to kill me first.
I could almost do so. This is the end between us. We part here. You are no fit companion for a soldier of fortune. Join the clergy, lad. That's your true vocation.
Now I was indeed without a friend. Saxon gone, Sir Jervis dead on the field of battle, and Reuben, oldest and dearest of all, lying wounded at Bridgewater at the mercy of a brutal soldiery. Nor had I anywhere to go. Weary and sick at heart that our cause should have failed so miserably, I turned Covenant's head and rode slowly away from the west.
That was part 4 of Micah Clark by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized in 5 parts by Constance Cox, with Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie, and featuring Simon Ward as the Duke of Monmouth. Sir Jervis Jerram was played by Mark Straker, Lord Grey by David Sinclair, Colonel Bowser by Geoffrey Collins, Major Ogilvy by Gregory DePolney, Master Wade by Steve Hodson, Mayor Timewell by William Eadle, Lieutenant Horsford by Christopher Douglas, The Little Child by Melissa Katsoulis, John Derrick by William Hope. The Preacher by Peter Aiken. The Verger by Brian Smith. A Trooper by Trevor Nichols. And A Man from Dumbarton's Regiment by Colin Starkey. Micah Clark was directed by David Johnston.